evening. This is meetings organised by Newcastle Stop Law. I'm a member of the Newcastle Stop Law Committee. My name is Alex Snowden. And I'm very pleased that we've got two speakers this evening, one who's on his way, and the other who is here, sitting next to me. Anne Schofield is a Labour councillor in the West End of Newcastle, a campaigner over a number of issues, involved in Palestine Solidarity Campaign here in Newcastle, amongst other things. And we'd particularly ask Anne to give a sort of broader focus than the main theme of this evening, which is around the escalating confrontation with Iran, to give a sort of broader sense of why we need an anti-war government. And then Jonathan Chaffee, who's representing Stop the War Coalition, who's coming down from Glasgow this evening. His train was getting in about 12 or 13 minutes ago, so he's legging up from the train station. He will speak, Anne's going to speak for about 8 or 10 minutes, and then Jonathan will speak for about 15 minutes. And his focus will mainly be around Iran and giving us the background and the context of that and looking at what the latest situation is. There are really two reasons why we decided to organise this meeting, two important contexts for it. One is the escalation in relation to Iran, the increasing threats, the increasing talk of conflict coming from Trump, and backed by Boris Johnson and his government in this country. Stop the War's main focus has always been about opposing British foreign policy, British involvement in war. And so the fact that Trump has such strong support from this country's government is very significant for us. The second context is the fact that more optimistically, more hopefully, in our conditions of acute political crisis in this country, there is the prospect of a general election before Christmas, and there is therefore the prospect of Jeremy Corbyn in Downing Street, and the potential for an anti-war government, and that would be the first time in British history really that there's been an anti-war government. It'd be quite a novelty. So one of the things we want to explore really is what that means, the potential for that, what that would look like, and what we need to do in order to get there. So we'll have Anne and Jonathan speaking, then we'll have some time for questions and discussion, and then a number of announcements about upcoming events at the end. So over to you, Anne.
I'm obviously the warm-up. I thought I was going to have the benefit of all the expertise and then, come in next. But never mind. I'm going to come. Can I stand up?
Yeah,
thanks. I just feel I'm sinking on this chair. when Alex said to me about it, I really had to think very seriously about how to come at this. And then on Wednesday, I went to a party meeting of women. All women. There were... Oh, hi. There were 80 women there. And a number of children, and it was in a community centre in the West End, and of the 86 women, there were over 25 languages. There were people between them, a lot of them were from different countries. I didn't get the exact numbers, and some of them were Iranian. So I was very lucky, so I was able to say, stop having a nice time, come and talk to me about what life's like for you. But the thing about this meeting was, these women in this community centre were very articulate, they were talking, they were socialising together, and quite a lot of them came from countries where there would have been conflict, where there would have been opposition, even within the group. And the thing that struck me so strongly was these women were very much together. And they were very much saying, we are here in the UK, we want to make a good effort for the UK, we feel really pleased to be here, we've been through terrible experiences, but we want to work together. So that gave me my sort of lead-in, really, for tonight. And so I just thought I'd start off by saying that as an international socialist, I reject all doctrines, ideals and actions of militarism, colonisation and imperialism. So of course I'm absolutely against a US-led war against Iran. For me, the world's political, economic and social security lies in the broadest possible cooperation and collective solutions for peace in the world. So for me again, worldwide justice, not nationalism, must be the basis for all our struggles and support and challenges for a peaceful world. As a socialist feminist, particularly concerned about rape and sexual violence used as a tool of war by military powers across the world, I believe also that we must act collectively against the war, men and women together. We also have to, though, see the dynamics of power that oppress women, and of course some men, and recognise the potential of women working together to stop wars and participate actively in peace processes. And that was the thing that struck me on Wednesday, that women were saying, we want to be part of this. We want to actually make a more peaceful world. Well, I've stressed being a socialist feminist, which in some places isn't a good thing to do, but I thought I was safe here. Because as a Labour Party member and trade unionist, I find it helps me hold my ground with members against their arguments for war with confidence, and I, you know, sometimes a bit nervous, but I'm confident. As people will know, and I expect there's some historians in the group, there always are, historically, arguments about war have aroused deep divisions in the Labour movement, and these are still very obvious today. For me and for many people, at their most terrible, they were when warmongering Blair took Britain to war in the Iraq War. In World War I, World War II, the Vietnam War, Afghanistan and Iraq, caused by socialists, very much that was my experience in the Iraq War, caused by socialists for international solidarity against war in the Labour movement, have typically not been strong enough against calls for militaristic nationalism to skewer an anti-war policy for peace. So I'm saying that it is the fact that I belong to the anti-war movement and as international socialist feminist that I feel I can make a point. And I stress this, which may seem a bit over the top, but I do find much of the criticism of the US war against Iran that isn't grounded in an anti-war socialist perspective typically muddies the responsibility for the crisis. It's striking to me how often the language of pro-war voices is used, perhaps inadvertently, sometimes not, to justify the US case for war. It describes Iran often as a despotic regime, engaged in a military adventurism, supporting regional terrorist organisations, or its military are described as malign actors using tools of violence. And in my view, if we are going to subject the crisis to fair and genuine scrutiny, then we need to hear from Iranian authors and ordinary people, making clear that the US institutions and practices can also be condemned on precisely these grounds. The war in Iraq, keeping children in cages, backing racist groups in Libya, massacres in Afghanistan, and so on. So we've actually, I think, a lot of the criticism that we see around, particularly in the press, is making the criticism, but it's not actually coming from a fair perspective. And the reason that I feel so strongly about this is, for many people that I know, particularly as a war counsellor, wanting to talk about such things, it's difficult for them to see which state, the US or Iran, has responsibility for the possibility of war that we're seeing, and then how to mobilise against it. So I think it's really right that tonight we're taking time for serious and urgent debate on why the war with Iran is wrong, and to insist the UK must not support US aggression against Iran. Now, as we all know, the situation is becoming increasingly volatile with Trump, playing a dangerous game, risking miscalculation on either side through his contradictory and erratic behaviour, first talking of war, then backing off, talking the language of coercive diplomacy, and very interesting, he's used it several times, massive pressure, bringing massive pressure on Iran, just like he said he did with North Korea. And I think this use of language again is very important. And the idea of the massive pressure on Iran is to submit it to US rules and conditions. There's also his unilateral withdrawal from the Iran nuclear deal. But we have to see it's not just Trump. And I always remember with Thatcher, I always used to make the point, put 10p in the box if you just talk about Thatcherism, as if it's just one person. There's a whole a government behind it and a whole load of people behind it. And what we're seeing in America is the hardline senior officers and politicians at the Pentagon who are looking for the pretext for war. Hi. I'm your warm-up. So I'm just giving a sort of personal and as I say, the hardline senior officers who are looking for a pretext for war, and this is why, again, I think we need to have an international socialist perspective. Even Israel. I'll wait. Even Israel, which sees Iran as an existential threat, wants to keep Iran as isolated as a low threat to the region, is showing concern about American bellicosity and myopia, and its failure to recognise the realities of unrelenting hostile campaign in the Middle East. Of course, Trump firing John Bolton, which of course ruined my best lines because I had it all worked out what I was going to say about John Bolton. A prime mover and what has been described as an idealistic hawk for the assertive military operations in Iran. His aim was to show the world that America can be great. Perhaps this signals Trump may be moving back to diplomacy, but there are still so many mixed messages on his strategic goals that I'm not sure we can trust those. So from my perspective, as a socialist and a feminist, socialist feminist, there is no plausible reason for US to go to war with Iran or impose harsh sanctions other than, as Chomsky said, to keep control of all energy resources and the routes for delivery of oil in the Middle East. Through the sanctions, the aim is to gain submission by Iran to the US dominance by driving the country into deep recession and ruining the lives of ordinary people, with an eye ultimately to regime change and imposition of Western-friendly government. I think it's worth saying Iran has done nothing comparable to that to the US society. But the spectre of the US failure in Iraq hovers over US plans for Iran. The similarities in the planning are stark. It was a war sold to the public that would be a short war based on shock and awe and on a series of lies about weapons of mass destruction. A war that then lasted 16 years with the death and displacement of thousands of ordinary Iraqis and the unleashing of regional conflict in a radicalised and destabilised region. Well, the consequences in Iran of this planning are incalculable, but they are known to be likely to be far greater than Iraq. Iran is an appreciably larger territory and the population is much greater. So Americans' idea of gaining control would be very difficult. And there would be certainly, at the moment, no likelihood of putting a US-friendly government in there. As in Iraq, it is likely to lead again to fragmentation and conflict between ethnic minorities and refugees crossing into neighbouring countries, causing a humanitarian crisis comparable to Palestine and Syria. So what is the key issue for the UK? Well, it seems to me that if there is a war, Britain will be pulled to be part of it. Despite the scenes and effort, the behind-the-scenes efforts in the UK to de-escalate the Iran crisis, Tory politicians, as Alex said, are turning away from consensus and the EU towards a stronger US relationship and broadly support the US confrontational line. Boris Johnson is closely tied to Trump politically and is obsequious in his hawkish desire to stay close to the US foreign policy. Britain's integration into the US war machine is also obvious in the build-up of our military capabilities across the Gulf as part of the Tory mantra of a global Britain foreign policy. Our involvement is also revealed by US reliance on our network of intelligence and staging posts for military personnel, planes and ships. Further, and this is often understated, the UK is progressively embracing a global military role with its extensive involvement in the Middle East arms trade. So we have a vested interest, the government has a vested interest in the conflict there, and little commercial incentive to stop working with the US. So in conclusion, we are right to protest and oppose US recklessness, demand that military action against Iran is ruled out, and press the UK government to veto the war in its foreign policy, in every aspect of it. So I'm happy to follow Jeremy Corbyn, who hopefully will leave the government very soon, that we should pause, stop and say there are times we just don't follow America. He was vindicated by events when he warned against the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, and he's right now. Britain should act to ease tensions in the Gulf, not fuel military escalation that, of course, began with the US withdrawal from the Iran nuclear agreement. Thank you.
Trump, totally agree, never trust Trump, still a very dangerous character, irrespective of sacking the ultra-hawkish John Bolton. And I think the fact that there were such tensions in Washington is a sign that they're not completely in control of things, and they don't have a clear strategy, they don't have a clear way forward. And that is, in a sense, an opening for the anti-war movement and for all those who want to halt the drive to war. They are not in a particularly strong position. So thank you very much for that input. Okay, I'm going to hand over to Jonathan Chaffee. Jonathan's come down...